This is episode 669 of the AWS podcast, released on May 28th, 2024.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the AWS podcast. Simon Lynch here with you. Great to have you back. I'm joined by a super special guest today. I'm joined all the way from beautiful Hawaii, we'll get into that in a moment, by Sammy Steele, who is the senior staff engineer at Figma. Welcome to the podcast, Sammy.
Thanks so much for having me on, Simon. It's great to be joining you.
Well, look, you're joining from a much more glamorous location than I am. I'm in approaching autumn slash winter Melbourne.
Oh, my.
So I'm enjoying Antarctic winds. But from what I can see, you are in beautiful Hawaii. How are you in Hawaii?
Well, it's funny. Well, actually, I love Melbourne, so I'm a bit jealous of you as well. But Figma has a work remote policy, and I realized about a few weeks ago I don't take enough advantage of it. So I actually, extremely last minute, like literally 2 days before I flew out, booked a house for a month and booked flights. And here I am in Hawaii for the next month.
Fantastic. Well, from what I can see, I can literally see the water from where you're sitting. So you've chosen well.
Yeah. I saw four rainbows in one meeting yesterday. So it's quite magical.
Excellent. So we're going to talk about something pretty cool and technically deep. And this is an entree into a blog post you've written as well with the team. But firstly, tell me a bit about your role, Sammy, at Figma, and more importantly, the work you've been doing recently on the database team.
Yeah. So hi, everyone. I'm Sammy Steele, and I'm a senior staff engineer at Figma, where I'm our tech lead on the databases team. And so I've been at Figma for just over 2 years now. I actually just hit my 2 year last week. And for that whole time, I've been on the databases team. More broadly, I've actually worked in databases for 5 years now because I was on databases for 3 years at Dropbox before coming to Figma. And so I really love the databases area. I think one of the really cool things about being there is that you get to be at the intersection of all these really existential problems and important, like, high impact things for the company. So my blog post touches on existential scale because we were growing 100x in 4 years, and that's hard. But that's really just a part of, you know, reliability comes down to your databases. Being able to generate new revenue often requires building infrastructure things that are powered by databases. Cost and consistency to make sure you don't lose important user data. All of this revolves around databases. And so it's one of the reasons I really love working in this area.
So it's interesting you talk about the existential nature of databases, because really, you know, corporate data is corporate data, whichever segment you are in. And it's interesting in our sort of modern focus on software development, we tend to think about the front end a lot, customer experience, UI type experience, the middle tier as well, you know, scalability and decoupling, et cetera. But we don't talk about databases as much as maybe we should. But if things go bump in the night for the database, it's really bad. Obviously, at Figma, you were looking at the database that you had and the situation that you had, and things weren't exactly where you wanted it to be. Dive a little deeper for us in terms of the challenges you're facing, because, you know, people are often afraid to touch the database as well. Like, oh, don't touch it. Things could go wrong. What were you looking at going, okay, we need to do something here?
Definitely. So I think databases, actually, in my mind, are one of the biggest unsolved scaling challenges for the really, you know, fast growth, largest companies that we have. Because like you said, people are used to thinking about scaling for a lot of these other systems, and there's pretty well-trodden, like, clear best practices that just solve scale for you. But I think databases are really one of the rare cases where there are a lot of things that claim to solve scale, but at some point when you get to the scale Figma was at, and when I even look around at most of our peer companies, we're still having to solve the problems ourselves in-house while building on top of, you know, existing things like Amazon. And so how this manifested for us is that we had, back in 2020, Figma became kind of an overnight success. Like, no one had been using Figma that much because it was founded in 2013. The product wasn't even released until 2017 or 2018. And suddenly in 2020 or 2019, it just took off exponentially.
Hockey stick.
And, right? And so as a result, the team was very small. It was all of infrastructure was a single 10-person team. Mm. at the time. And most of them had no experience at scale because people didn't think Figma was a cool company to work at the time. Or some people, you know, were clearly smart enough to realize it soon would be, but not enough. And so we basically, back in 2020, this is 2 years before I joined, we were on the second largest RDS instance and basically on negative headroom. Like CPU was at something like 80% plus. And we were having just close to falling over every single night at peak traffic. There are a lot of things the team did, you know, I'm happy to get into more details to kind of buy short-term runway. And a lot of it was just push out that kind of existential risk. Because if your databases go hard down, like people don't realize how bad that is. A lot of times if you have an outage, it's like you fix the issue and you move on.
Yeah.
But if your databases can't scale anymore, you're going to essentially go hard down for 4 or 5 hours for the entire duration of peak traffic. And that's going to keep happening every day until you figure out a long-term solution.
There's no reboot and it'll be okay. And one of the other nice nuances of databases, at least in my experience, is once you sort of move beyond 80% CPU, all kinds of weird stuff happens because the database is trying to do all of its housekeeping and its cleaning and everything else, and it can't do it. And as you say, you start to get into this really nasty situation. And I guess the challenge you had is obviously you're growing like crazy, so there's more demand on the database tier all the time. You can't just say, hey, let's take a time out and just stop. So how do you balance this, I guess, this classic thing of, you know, the plane is flying and you need to upgrade it in flight? Because that's kind of where you got to. How do you think about that, I guess, firstly, from a mental model perspective? And then let's dive into some of the technical details.
I think one of the big things we realized was that incremental solutions, when you have exponential scale, aren't enough. So we were growing 3x every year for 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, for instance, when I first joined the team, that we were exploring, someone had an idea that could save us 30% CPU. And that seemed like a huge win to me. And I couldn't figure out why we weren't doing it. And then someone sat me down and showed me the math. And like, I'm a math major, but I had a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that that 30% CPU gain, which was 2 months of work, was, with 3x growth, only an extra month of runway. So essentially we'd be losing a month in trying to do this project.
The juice was not worth the squeeze on that one.
Exactly. And so to deal with exponential growth, you need problems that buy you exponential scale. So a lot of what we did early on was buy the runway to do the bigger long-term fix by doing a lot of short-term mediations. And also, because the team was so small, we weren't going to be able to solve this problem ourselves. So it was really a collective company effort of what are things that other teams in the company, like product teams, can do, for instance, rewriting some of their most expensive features to use a caching layer instead of the database.
And I guess that's an interesting thing, is that there's that trade-off of the things to give you enough runway to do the big thing. Yeah, and it's funny how often the basics aren't done, because when you're scaling, you're in startup mode, you don't have time necessarily for optimization. People are often told, you know, what is it? Premature optimization is the root of all evil. You know, so it's like, well, don't optimize, just do things. And then you go, well, actually, if we fix these 10 queries, if we add a cache, if we change our storage layer a little bit, we can survive. But you were really thinking about the next layer of how do we really solve this once and for all? Tell us a bit about the choices you were looking at and then what you decided to actually go with.
To your first point, I think a big call out here for startups is Figma did survive for a very long time on one RDS Postgres instance.
It's good enough for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. And once it's not, that's a good problem to have. Like the time to focus on it. Yeah, so what we needed was some horizontally scalable solution. And we explored a few things. A lot of folks look at things like DynamoDB or these kind of NoSQL solutions that allow you to just seamlessly scale. But for Figma, we actually have a really complex data model. Our data model is quite relational. It has a lot of joins and complex indexes and things that we relied on. And so we would have had to essentially rewrite our whole application. And that was just a non-starter for us. NoSQL was out.
That's not going to happen.
No, exactly. And then the next obvious thing everyone points out are like new SQL-like solutions. And there are, you know, a lot of those out there now. And I think one of the things that we learned from this is all of these solutions are working for someone, but for databases, the workloads become so specific to a company's like model. It's like the latency and things like that are really specific to the types of query your company's business logic is running. And so what works for one company often doesn't work for another. And a story that didn't make it into our blog post is we actually tried one of these new SQL things. Oh, I won't tell you which one. Yeah, yeah. We spent 3 whole months trying to make it work, which in our time was a lot of, like, we didn't have a lot.
That's a big investment. You're taking a pretty big bet on 3 months.
Exactly. And it didn't work at all. At the end of 3 months, we were like, this is not feasible. So at that point, we felt like it was a huge risk to try another one of these and have it again not work out. And so we really optimized for things that were in our control, even if it was a bit more work and a bit more long-term complexity, we wanted to own the solution. And so we ended up going with an incremental approach that would allow us to build horizontal sharding on top of the existing RDS Postgres infrastructure, which also let us really leverage all of our knowledge of RDS Postgres. Like we have, in the course of this, become really Postgres experts. We actually have a really close relationship with your RDS team. We meet with them quite regularly because we're one of the larger customers and they've been really helpful in helping us scale. And so that felt like another reason to stay on Postgres and horizontally shard on top of it so we could keep those relationships and that knowledge base that our team had.
So I think there's some really interesting lessons there. Really, it's about that fact of recognizing and almost celebrating and leveraging that experience that exists in a team. Like, you don't have to throw everything out and start again. And also, I guess, a clear-eyed view that you can't start again. You can't redo a do-over. And so finding that in-between path is important. And I think this is one of those classic cases that everyone in IT loves. It's an it depends sort of thing. How would I solve this problem? Well, it depends. It depends on the application and how it's written. And I think one of the great things you and the team have done here is you've dived deep on your application, on the business, on the way it accesses the data, the way you use it. And you've leveraged that rather than just saying, well, let's just throw a new product at it. Surely it'll be better.
Yeah.
You tried that and it's not better.
Totally. I mean, I think one of the interesting things here is in a lot of ways, my team did have to become experts on our entire application. Like as we were doing horizontal sharding, a lot of the trade-offs that we made were involved us getting pretty deep into application code and really understanding what was happening beneath the surface there.
It's funny how the art of reading explained plans and optimizing queries has been lost over time in the separation of teams. I think bringing those teams together often helps. You kind of sort of then said, okay, we're going with horizontal sharding. It's one of those classic things. It's an easy phrase to say. It's a hard thing to do well and reliably. And we're only talking about the data of the company that you rely on for a business. So, you know, what could possibly go wrong? How did you tackle this particular part of the challenge? Because it's not a small thing.
The goal was make it as small a thing as possible, which was still not a small thing. So when we started out, we looked ahead and we saw probably 15 or 20 work streams that would be needed to ship the entire horizontally shard all of Figma. And most of those are 3 to 6 month long projects for a couple people. So clearly we couldn't wait for all of that. And what we looked for was our highest growth rate tables were our highest write tables at this point. And those happened to luckily mostly have relatively simple data models. And so we actually were able to pick tables that required significantly less features than the majority of our tables at Figma would have. And so we were able to kill probably 3 to 5 work streams in the first 6 months just by picking one specific table that let us not do a whole bunch of things to shard.
Which I think is an interesting approach because it really, again, reminds us that the big bang approach is not the way to go if you're trying to get success. It's this kind of strangler fig, you know, gradual pattern where, yeah, you just keep chipping away. And your team probably learned a great deal while you were doing those initial tables too. You're working with, hopefully, as you say, an easier data model, but you're still trying to get this learning curve of horizontal sharding. Which means that by the time you get to the end of that, when you get the harder data models, the other stuff is done. So there's kind of benefits there.
Exactly. And so you learn as you go, you understand better what problem you should actually be solving. Like I'll give an example of this. So one of the things that really changes when you have multiple horizontally sharded databases is that transactions at the Postgres layer don't work anymore. So you can have writes that hit one table or one shard and succeed and others can fail. we call this a partial commit failure, but you know, this can be really bad. Like imagine if you're moving some data between two folders or organizations and it got lost halfway through. So we could have built atomic cross-shard transactions. Actually, myself and my team have collectively probably implemented 3 or 4 different versions of this in past jobs. But it felt like a really big commitment, and it also doesn't always work at scale. And so our next thought was have product engineers just rewrite their code so that it will work with these partial failure modes. And it worked for the simpler tables. But when we started to get to more complex tables, we realized that actually we had 4 senior staff engineers sitting in a room across product and infra, and we spent an hour talking about one transaction that we were trying to figure out if it was safe, and we just couldn't figure it out. And so we realized we can't possibly ask every engineer in the company to do this on a daily basis.
And imagine supporting that as well, like when you're trying to fix something in the middle of the night.
Exactly. And so what we ended up doing was a much more pragmatic approach. We categorized transactions into the high-risk ones that like user data could be corrupted if this went wrong. And those you obviously have to focus on and fix. But a lot of them weren't that important. They were like, maybe a UI will look a little odd, but a user reclicks it and it's fine. And we did the math and realized probably we would only see 2 of these in a whole year. So we just decided, let's monitor and kind of fix them ad hoc. And that's been good enough for us. We haven't had any problems since making that choice.
That's a really interesting trade-off of understanding where the application of good enough versus it must be perfect really ties in. Because like you said, you could have burnt a lot more time on things that didn't matter. It's that coming together of senior folks and folks that understand the system to have that probably quite a challenging conversation about where you're going to focus. I'm sure it wasn't a clean and easy meeting. It was probably a little messy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's the fun part of my job too, is that these are, you know, hard decisions you're making. Like one of the hard decisions we had to make as a team, because we were kind of a small team and we were scaling so fast, is we focused on scale for a long time without focusing on certain reliability risks that we knew we were just deferring. At some point, you know, these are going to come back to bite you, but they're less existential than scale. And so a fun thing as we come out on the other side of horizontal sharding is that now we finally get to make these investments. It's a tough judgment call at the time. It feels like a lot of pressure on your shoulders to make the right call.
Totally. Everything is priority one. Everything's the most important thing. But at some point, you've got to make a call. What was the result? You mentioned that, you know, at the start, you're at this point where scaling was becoming a challenge to an existential point. What did post the movement to this sharding approach look like?
So here's where we're at today. We have horizontally sharded our highest write rate tables, which means basically these were all the ones we are most concerned were going to hit some hard scaling limits or even just soft reliability limits in the next year. And so we have actually for the first time in 4 years, the headroom to prioritize things beyond just scale. Now that doesn't mean we've stopped horizontally sharding, because a year from now, we still have tables that will become problems. Yeah, and so we kind of have to keep making steady progress towards that end state. And that means building a lot of cool, more complex features that we had pushed off till now, like fixing a schema, making schema work in a horizontally sharded world is a really fun problem we're about to tackle. Also, reliability, we're finally making those investments. And we're also finding that we're at the heart of a lot of core business revenue generating projects that our company is working on this year. And so it's fun as an infra person to get to work on that, because I think a lot of the times as infra, we don't see the business revenue kind of new product side of things. And that's actually hasn't been true for me at Figma. We're getting to do some pretty cool things that people will actually be seeing get launched at our user conference config in a couple of months.
That's really cool. And I think that's a really important point, is that it's kind of easy to be buried away in the back room as an infrastructure person and sort of your many layers removed from quote unquote the business, even though what you run is the business. Making those connections becomes important, because again, then you're making valid judgments about where to spend your time, and you're understanding the monetary and staff investment that the company's trying to make, and you can direct it in the right way. So, because I can imagine, you know, for most CEOs, having a deep and meaningful conversation about the horizontal sharding of a database is not number one on the list of things they may want to talk about. But it's kind of critical if you can characterize it as well. I'm not talking about sharding the database. I'm talking about supporting these new lines of business or maintaining this ability to help our customers grow. It's a very different conversation for an infra person to have.
I think I've personally learned a lot about how to think about that impact and also work with our execs. You know, our CTO is very technical, but he gets involved in a lot of this prioritization stuff. And it's been fun to learn how to talk with more senior executives there too. A fun example of this actually is, okay, so Figma has this big annual conference called Config. It's basically our biggest day of the year when we launch all of the products that we have been working on. And so last year, our config was 7 times larger than any previous config had been.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was in Moscone Center in SF, which is like one of the biggest conference centers in SF. And I realized going into the conference that in past years, we had kind of just shipped things and it worked. And we were small enough that we didn't really have to think more than that. Mm. You know, at the scale Figma was at now, we were doing live demos during a keynote speech while we launched all of our like 10 features from 0 to 100% into production all at once. And I was having this nightmare of like the site will go down in the middle of this as Dylan Field, our CEO, is trying to demo something. Luckily, we ended up coming up with a big reliability plan. We got DRIs from infra to talk with every product team and support them. And we had a, you know, worst case, what if something goes wrong, what do we do plan? And we all sat in a war room during config and watched the speech. And luckily it went off without a hitch, but like that's an example of, you know, infra getting involved in what is ostensibly just a product thing.
I'm going to say you said luckily it went off without a hitch. I don't think luck had anything to do with it, quite frankly. It sounds like it was good planning, a lot of folks working hard on it, but I commend also the fact that it was live. It was real. It wasn't slideware. It wasn't, you know, imagine this. It was like, no, this is, we're doing this thing. And I think that's the magic of the cloud. That's the magic of modern software development. Like, that wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. Like, that's just not how it was done, but you've done it, which is tremendous.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of Figma's secret sauce. What I love about working here is this whole real-time collaborative in the browser experience. And I'm not a designer, but now working here, I finally get why designers love Figma so much. It's really pretty incredible to see. Even we have, I know, a whiteboarding tool, FigJam, that my team uses all the time. And it's just the closest you can get to having everyone in a room together, which obviously is a lot harder to do post-COVID.
Well, particularly when you're sitting in Hawaii as well. So you've, you know,
yes, there's certainly upsides to it. Yes.
The journey is always really interesting and the change of mindset is really interesting. So to take us back to Sammy at the start of the process to Sammy at the end of the process and the assumptions and decisions and perspectives you had maybe at the start of what you did versus now, because we, you know, we change as we go and you would have said, well, we'll just do this or we'll just do that. And, you know, we tend to apply patterns we've used in the past with good effect in the future, but I'm suspecting that not all those patterns applied here. What's changed in your mental models around database scaling through this process?
Yeah, well, I was coming from a somewhat different databases background, sort of one level up from this scale. So I was at Dropbox for 3 years, where when I joined the databases team there, they were on sharded MySQL 2000 fully horizontally sharded things. And we were outgrowing that because we had single orgs that were outgrowing a single database. So it's almost like, you know, where I could see Figma being 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And so it was a fun mindset shift to go really much earlier in the stack and learn what that's like. And I think coming from a bigger company to a smaller company, a lot of times I knew how things should be and could be, and I wanted them to be that way as fast as possible. One of the big learnings for me was, you know, there's a reason why we haven't made all of these great abstractions yet, because it's not the right thing to prioritize right now. Like when I first joined, we didn't have any SLAs internally on the databases team or really in infra.
Wow.
That was, you know, 2.5 years ago. And now, a year after I was there, it finally felt like the right time to push for that. And we adopted it. And it's now everyone in the company has them. But so I think it's really a matter of coming in with experience, but then wanting to take the time to understand the actual context of what your company needs.
Mm. I think that's really powerful, because there's a temptation, particularly when you're new and you're kind of trying to prove yourself and demonstrate value, et cetera. It's like, I'll just, you know, I'm here now. Here's how we're going to do everything versus let me be quiet and use the ratio of 2 ears to 1 mouth in the correct proportion and listen. And I think it's interesting, as whenever I speak to staff engineers, this seems to be one of the key attributes, is that ability to go and listen and to hear and to assess before planning rather than coming
yeah.
in. Because you could have rocked in and said, hey, I've done all this amazing stuff at Dropbox, way more scalable. We'll just go ahead and do this, you know, go at it.
Yeah.
But you didn't take that approach. You're like, no, let me step back here and be really deliberate.
Yeah, I think my coworker calls this strong opinions weakly held. You know, as a staff engineer, you want to have a strong opinion because you're the one setting the long-term direction, but you also want to take in new information and be willing to change if your opinion was actually wrong.
You're spot on. The ability to change your mind is a superpower. And it's hard because people tie it into ego. I'm the boss. I'm the one who's supposed to know everything. I've got the brain the size of a planet. How can I possibly change my mind? But making a boneheaded decision and not allowing yourself to admit it was a boneheaded decision and that you can make better decisions is actually the foolish thing to do. So you kind of got to flip it on its head.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of people I most love working with are the ones who are able to see the big picture of like what's right for the company. Because at the end of the day, you know, if we disagree on something, as long as our value is like do what's best for Figma, then we probably just have a different idea of what's best for Figma. Yeah. And that's what we need to fix.
Amazing. This is a tremendous story, Sammy, and a credit to you and the team. And obviously there's a much deeper blog post to read into as well for folks who want detail. But Sammy, thanks so much for taking time out of your day and sharing that beautiful view of Hawaii with us and sharing your journey.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on. And to all the listeners, thanks for tuning in. You know, come to our Config conference. It's in San Francisco, June 26th and 27th. And also my team is hiring very aggressively. So
there you go.
Especially if you're a senior or a staff engineer out there, we have a lot of fun problems and we could use you.
You don't need better invitation than that. And you've heard what the kinds of problems are and the kind of opportunity to work at. So I think you'll be getting an influx there, Sammy, that's for sure. And thanks everyone for listening. We do love to get your feedback. AWS podcast at amazon.com is the place to do it. And until next time, keep on building.